KellerKellerOfficial.com.
You need the Kellervision app. 24/7 mini documentaries, podcasts, live shows, DJ live streams, top fives, subscription packages, plus products for all your podcasts and street culture sports. Download it from the App Store for free today.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller Podcast.
I feel like we should be looking at each other a bit instead of like we're presenting the show.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, this is part of the random escapades of the Killer Keller Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, Killer Keller Podcast live and direct, Central London, or Central as you need to be, could be or wanna be. My new guest will testify to that.
It's definitely Central.
Big shout out to graffitikings.co.uk. Everyone's got a television app. Listen, sharing is caring, all right? I'm doing this for my health, all right? You share away and tell a friend to tell a friend. Inside the house, we have a man that I've known way before his Kickstarters, before he changed the way he allowed them to kiss him. It's the mighty example in the house.
Did you freestyle that, or did you? Yeah, wrote that this morning?
No, I didn't. I literally
wrote that in the shower.
Can you tell I freestyled it?
Yeah, it was a bit weird.
Example inside the place. How you doing, my brother?
Yeah, I'm wicked, bro. I'm wicked. I'm just in doing like a sort of whistle stop tour of the UK. I'm here for 6 weeks. I'm sort of packing because obviously I live in Oz now. I'm packing. It feels like about 6 months of work into 6 weeks.
Because I mean, in fairness, for him to even be here is a good look because you were really toiling on. Oh, I don't know if I've got time.
Yeah, I didn't know, but I had to get my first few weeks out of the way. Like, I live in Brisbane now. I had to get a special exemption to fly here. I got bumped twice off flights. It's mental.
Yeah, I've been following this.
Australia's like the hardest place to get into and the hardest place to get out to at the moment. Because they were doing so well with COVID and then they just completely fucked it up because, what is it? They didn't roll out the vaccines.
They didn't.
They didn't. They only just started about 3-4 months ago.
Yeah, we are ahead. I mean, the UK
was looking like a shit show for a while and now is like one of the best places to be. Yeah. Australia, I mean, I live in Brisbane where everything's cool, but if you're in Sydney or Melbourne,
forget it, man.
You're just stuck indoors all day. Yeah. Still, like my sister's been in lockdown in Bondi Beach for like 12 weeks with her kids.
Man, and that's the same. What's so Sydney? Because that's like a metropolitan city.
Sydney is absolute fucked up, man.
Really?
But enough about that.
Yeah, enough about that because that'll date it. We're evergreen over it. When you say about Central, I mean, yeah, you have travelled such a distance to be around London and orbit. What's it like? What's the comparables? Like, what's it like being an expat now? What's it like being in Australia compared to here?
Australia, like, it took us a while. My wife and I to find our good friends, our people, like-minded people. It was a bit tough the first year. Her mum and dad and brothers lived there. My mum and dad moved there 15 years ago. They live on the Gold Coast, about an hour away from us in Brisbane. So for the first year, it felt like our family were our friends. So I didn't really have my music people. I didn't have a producer. I didn't know any rappers or singers. I didn't know any DJs. I didn't know anyone, any chefs, because I love my cooking so much. I didn't really... like just people to link with and just not talk about, you know, everyone's in construction or they're an estate agent and like I can go out and have a nice lunch with them.
Yeah.
But it took a while to find my people. You know what I mean? But my wife and I, she's a model presenter. She was an actress. She was in Neighbours for a bit. She's just done SAS, Australia, the celeb one.
I think I've seen this. Again, you know,
she's an action woman.
Yeah. She's on it, isn't she?
But yeah, so we moved there because we wanted to give our kids a better life. Kids have got an amazing life. You know, we wake up at 6 a.m. It's lovely and sunny. We walk down the hill to drop them at school. My wife and I go mountain biking or swimming or play tennis, you know, before we might start work at 11 or 12 some days. We've got it good, man. I think all the years of hard work I put in between maybe... even when I met you, 2006.
Cool, you had been going way before then, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, my first release was 2003.
Yeah.
But when I can't remember where I met you at. Was it the Camden Underground or
yeah, it was a show something before that? Yeah.
Well, it might have been Dill Reel.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it was about like 2004 or 2005. Anyway.
Oh God, that's a mirror.
Yeah, I think. I did about 6 or 7 years of really struggling, like making no money, but doing maybe 40, 50 gigs a year for maybe £50 or £100, playing support slots or playing in pubs or open mics, just whatever I could. And then I signed to Skinner's label, obviously, mm-hmm. 2007, six. First album came out 2007. That flopped. Mm. Although I sort of had a little fan base, like 90%, sort of 18-year-old boys.
Yeah, yeah. But hold on. And this was an interesting pick, because I remember we were on a tour bus. I can't remember. I think it was Plan B.
It was Plan B.
Yeah, it was Plan B. That was one. And you said something that was quite... It's actually stuck with me for a long time.
Wow.
Yeah,
I'm,
man.
I'm ready for this.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
You said the reason why Mike signed you was because of the tone of your voice.
Yeah.
Now, I felt that set precedence to everything that came after.
Okay. Fair
because
enough.
Because the way you sing, it's your natural voice. The way you rap, it's that everything is...
Because a lot of people, they rap in a different voice than they talk, yeah. And they sing in a different voice.
And it all
voice.
Hangs and on I, your tone, man. It
and
does.
I think Skinner, when he signed me, he was just like, look, I want to... He goes, you're not going to be the Beastie Boys. Because, you know, you've got quite a soulful, deep voice. Mm. And I don't want you shouting and doing this fake thing. He's like, you need to find your sound. And I don't think I found it with that first album. I kind of felt like my first album, I learned what not to do.
Mm.
And not that I look back on the album and dislike it. There's some really nice moments on there. Mm. I mean, we had like 27 samples on the album, so I was never going to make any money from it. You know, we sampled...
Leave that off Spotify.
Yeah, we sampled The Carpenters and Muddy Waters and Kylie Minogue. Yeah. And
but you kind of took the hit because it's the first album. You kind of just absorbed all
yeah,
the
I didn't really know what I was doing. And then I was going to quit music and go to Australia because my mum and dad had just moved there. Because they realised if they stayed in England, they'd be working until they were dead. So my dad just sort of like upped and left and... Mm. Sold his house in Fulham because it was like when they moved, it was $3 to the pound. That's the only reason they sort of went because like at the moment I think it's made $1.8 to the pound. But imagine going to Australia and trebling your money.
That was the only
reason they went. I think pretty much, and it was obviously an amazing country to live in. And I was going to go with them too. I was working in TV at the time, and then Ministry of Sound approached me. A guy called Dave Dollymore. I bumped into him last week in Kensington. I had a nice catch up and a beer with him. He's now running RCA Records.
Right.
And he's one of the good ones.
Yeah.
Most A&Rs, absolute dickheads. I haven't got a clue. Failed musicians.
There's some A&Rs that watch this. So, we won't be specific on who, but I mean, none of you lot.
You know, like the ones that are like, oh, I was in a band, I know about music. It's like, no, the reason your band didn't work is because you don't know anything about music.
Yeah, yeah.
And now you're trying to tell me about music. Anyway, he was like, what's your view on electronic music? I was like, well, I love The Prodigy. Mm. I love Basement Jacks. I love Faithless. Mm-mm. I love Chemical Brothers. He was like, well, I think everything you're doing in terms of your voice is good and your storytelling's great. He goes, I think you should try singing and I think you should try dance music. And I was like, well, I don't know any dance producers. And he was like, don't worry about that. I mean, like, I knew Calvin Harris kind of just from MySpace.
But how did you meet him? How did you meet, before the Calvins and all that, how did you meet the A&R guy?
Manager, Mick Shiner.
Big up, Mick.
We got Mick. So Mick pretty much discovered Plan B and The Streets.
That's it. Yeah.
And published them. He never managed them.
There was a label that he had as well, wasn't
there? Yeah, he used to run Locked On and 679 Recordings and Pure Groove up in Archway. Mm. So there was a kind of nice little community there. My manager, he's not my manager anymore. We parted ways a few years ago. We still like talk all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a really good run of success with like, he had Metronomy, Plan B, Me and The Streets.
That is a
nice legacy.
Yeah, proper.
And he was managing me, and he was just like, I don't. And this is back when I had my sort of big, what's that, Mick Jagger floppy. I've had all the shit.
It's
haircuts.
Kind of the indie look.
I mean, you've had all the shit.
Yeah,
haircuts,
yeah. I know you changed it. we're still going strong, right?
The shit haircut podcast. Yeah. And he just was like, he said, look, come meet this guy at Ministry. I think you'll like him. And he weren't initially my kind of guy because I usually like big personalities. I don't like people who are calm and considered because I'm like, you're not on my wavelength.
And
that's what I needed. I need someone calm and considered.
The fire with water.
Yeah. The yin and yang. And I just met Chasing Status and I just met Sub Focus. Mm. My manager knew MJ Cole. Do you remember Hervé? Josh?
Of course, right. Literally, I think, actually.
Joshy Hervé. I'd met him at a gig in, like, Camden or... It was probably Shoreditch. Mm. Everything was always Shoreditch around them times, like 2006, wasn't it?
It still kind of is, except not as cool as when we were.
Yeah, not as cool as, yeah.
Come on.
We've got cooler haircuts now.
Yeah, exactly. Sort we can fit right in.
and, yeah, so I realised all of a sudden, I was like, actually, we've got like the backbone of an album here from just through these contacts. Sub Focus was blowing up in drum and bass, but wasn't yet massive. Mm. So I've only ever made one song with Sub Focus. He's obviously now, I'd say apart from Chase the Status and Wilkinson, he's probably the biggest drum and bass DJ in the world. Andy C.
And behind the scenes of Andy C,
But I mean, in terms of production, probably one of the best ever. I'd say Chase the Status, Sub Focus, Pendulum, they're the three best of all time.
And they've come to fruition for that reason, you know? The cream don't rise for
that
reason.
I did one song with Sub Focus and that was Kickstarts.
That was produced, but of course it was.
And then he's been scared to do another song with me since because he was just like, well, how are we ever going to beat that? And I was like, well, we could give it a go. and then I did a song with Calvin, I did a song with MJ Cole, I did a song with Chase the Status, and then Don Diablo, who's now massive in Europe, more like that sort of EDM house sound. But he's probably one of the biggest DJs in the world now, but at the time was just big in Holland. So he reached out to me again, I think through MySpace. So the whole album was kind of made from a few Ministry of Sound contacts and a few MySpace and Twitter contacts. And then that was kind of like my recipe after that. After I did Kick, so I had a few like top 10s and top 20s. I didn't really ever care about charts. I just wanted, but that's, you say that when you haven't had a chart hit. And as soon as you've had a chart hit, you just want more.
That's right.
Because it's almost like, I was making hip hop, and it was like a wonky hip hop. You know, it wasn't like, I didn't feel like I had a real groove to it where people could dance to it or mosh to it.
It was more like a boom, bap. It's got to feel right,
boom,
hasn't
boom, boom,
it?
Bap, yeah, yeah. Boom. It was a very wonky, awkward hip-hop. It had its charms.
Yes, that's right.
But it wasn't like a head sort of hip-hop, you know what I mean?
And here's the thing, and in the crossover where grime was coming along, there was also that UK hip-hop task force kind of... And rightly so as well, you fitted right in the pocket of both, but there wasn't an audience for that.
So this is 2009, so there wasn't, no, the Americans hadn't yet invented the stupid term EDM either. It's called dance music, not electronic dance music. It's electronic. No, dance music's electronic. No, this is we gotta own this.
But you were on.
We're gonna own this.
You were on the crest of a wave, and I remember.
Yeah, because Kickstarts, it sounds like if you look back, you go, it's an EDM song, but it was actually 2 years before all of that.
Oh, totally. We were there. It was me. Does It Offend You? Yeah, we just done a couple of gigs. We were in this festival, and I do remember it so well. Where we'd all had a drink, and you come up to us, and you were like, "Oh, I've just signed to ministry. I'm gonna be da 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 da," and we all looked at you like, "Yeah, right." Fucking blew up. Like,
mental,
the fuck up. Like, I was like, yo, okay. It's serious.
Yeah, well, that Kickstarts was number three, but it also was the first one that sort of got me attention outside the UK. All of a sudden, I got my gig fees probably went tenfold.
Yeah.
You know, it was like getting 500 quid a gig to maybe like 10 bags a show. I was just like, what? And they were like, they want to see you in Hungary and Austria and Germany and Sweden and Norway. And
is it because the industry had the opportunity to actually raise a project that they intuitively knew how to market?
I think the Ministry of Sound, the marketing team, knew exactly who my fan base were and how to find them. I think that's what they smashed it with. I mean, my audience seemed to be like 90% male, like 18-year-old kids. And then it seemed to change to sort of 50-50 girls and guys from like 15 all the way up to 40.
Because I see someone.
The Ministry
audience,
knew
man.
Exactly where
they're young
to
too.
Sell that those CDs. My gigs now, there's people in their 60s in the back, like old ravers. I mean, the mad thing for me now is I'm 40 next year. My tour that's just gone on sale for January, February next year. Bear in mind, most people's tours are struggling. Everyone's.
They said postponed,
and like uncertainty. My agent was like, "Look, they're expecting you to do well. They reckon you might sell 10% of the tickets in the first week. I sold 40% of the tickets in the first hour.
Come on, my guy.
And this was the same day I was told by Radio 1 that I wasn't...
Yeah, I saw that.
They were like, well, you don't fit our demographic anymore. Like, you're playing Coldplay and Liam Gallagher. Mm. Yeah, but you're a bit old. You're playing Coldplay and Liam Gallagher. Yeah, but you're from a different era. You're playing Coldplay and Liam Gallagher. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's that thing.
But then we looked at the ticket sales and it was like, 40%, we sold 15,000 tickets in a day.
Yeah.
And 40% of them were 18 to 21 year olds, which means I've got this whole new generation of fans.
What's your fucking problem, people?
Exactly, you pricks. Anyway, but what's mad now is the people coming to this tour next year would have been 11 when, say, Change the Way You Kiss Me was number one.
Mad. So, how does that make you feel when you think
it's
about
crazy? Because I think everyone has a certain shelf life. But then it just goes to show that there's always new people discovering music.
Mm.
And it's mad. Like, I played Sundown Festival in Norwich the other week. And we had 15,000, 20,000 people watching us. And we were third on the main stage. And then the acts that came on afterwards like played to less and less. It was almost like, I mean, I'm not saying it in a mean way. I do get competitive, but I just love the fact that we had the biggest crowd of the entire weekend, and the crowd were pretty much all 20.
Competitive is what.
But they know all my, because I've got all these bassline tunes as well. I've got like a song with Darksea and a drum and bass song with K9, and then I've got like a song with Jaws. So I've got this heavy bass section in the middle where the mosh pits are like something like a Prodigy gig, you know, like 50-100 foot wide mosh pits.
I still need to get to one because obviously I saw the one I think you did. What was it? The BBC in the Park Hackney thing. That was fucking 2014, 15 or something?
Yeah, that was the year that Jay-Z headlined.
Yeah, yes. Oh, and...
It was Jay-Z, Kanye, Ed Sheeran,
I think Rihanna
Kasabian,
was there as well.
Me.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
That was the main stage.
And that's when I last saw you. Who's your DJ?
Wire.
Big up, Wire.
DJ Wire.
Yeah, man. Let's go back to Norwich. I remember my brother... God, now we're pushing... The last gig I did with you was Norwich. I had the hump that day. I can't remember what it was specifically, but I had the hump and I walked in. I was like sitting there like, I think it was something to do with radio playlists probably. And I was sitting there and I was thinking to myself.
Was this, whose gig was it? Mine or your Plan B's?
It was a combination. I think you were the top of the headline, but it was a combination of us and a little known guy called Ed Sheeran.
Oh, yeah, Ed Sheeran, yeah.
And he came into the backstage room where
we
were.
Yeah, it was me. The lineup was me, you, Ed Sheeran.
Bonkers.
Fuck, that is the last gig we played together. Yeah. That was.
I think we jumped on stage and jammed together as well. I think we did that as well.
That was 2009.
Long time ago, bro. Just before he blew, but you know.
Yeah, because I just released a song called Hooligans, which. Zane Lowe made hottest record in the world. That was kind of like where it started again for me because Radio 1 said to me in 2008, they said to my radio plugger, Example will never be playlisted at Radio 1, ever. We don't like him, we don't get him. And then a year later, Zane gave me hottest record in the world. And then in the 4 years that followed, we had 18 A-list records.
So kiss that ass.
But that's why I always say to people, just don't give up. Just stick to your guns, do what you want to do. And even now I'm being told by radio, all radio stations, apart from like, you might get a little specialist play on a dance show.
Yeah, big up the specialist, big up
the specialist. But the shows are getting, radio's getting more and more like Spotify because because radio are competing with Spotify. Mm. Instead of being more radio-like to make themselves more original, i.e. more original content, more chat, more original song plays, up-and-coming acts, whatever, they're going the opposite. They're trying to copy playlists in Spotify. So they're being told to talk less. Yeah. To do less competitions, less phone-ins.
We should be the opposite.
We should be the opposite. Yeah. And like that's what I mean. Like Radio 1's just lost Annie Mac and Nick Grimshaw, two of the best broadcasters this country's ever had, and people who were, you know, Annie could play what she wanted pretty much. Grimmy would be able to play, I don't know, maybe five or six free plays in 2 hour slots. Mm. That's still quite powerful.
Yeah, that's right.
If you want to give audience the new an act in the audience, so it's quite sad. That's the one thing I do love about Australia is Triple J.
I love Triple J.
Triple J in Australia is kind of like BBC Six Music.
That's right, it is, yeah.
And they will, so say a new album comes out by me or whatever, instead of playing, they might not even play the lead single. They'll play the album intro.
That's right.
They'll just go, with the new Example record's out, and hey, you know the new single's flying, but I want to play you my favourite track from the album. And it's the intro. And
then, he's got the
you know what I mean?
Down.
And then and it's like, that's how radio should be.
Yeah. Yeah, introducing and discovery.
Yeah.
I have found that when I would be in another country, the radio would be on, and you'd listen to, like, I don't know, Motorhead, and then all of a sudden would be like, I don't know, Anastasia or some shit. And you're just like, yeah, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah, yeah.
Because they just don't go with the status quo or the you know, the playlist agenda. Yeah, yeah. They go with what they...
When you think of, like, Kappa FM, you listen... I mean, like, do you remember when you used to, like, listen to, I mean, like, Chris Tarrant Breakfast Show or something? And most of it was just him going... we don't want to... You know, just the bong game, you know. It's just all games and chat and they'd be reading the newspapers and taking the piss and did you hear about this funny story that happens? A bit like Chris Evans' show is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now everything's just like... Hey, you listened to Capital. Coming up in a minute, another song. And now here's this song. Bye. And that's it.
And then the commercial.
And that's meant to be broadcasting.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fucking ridiculous, man.
It's ridiculous.
I find now podcasts are just like, because I love listening to them, that it's a great way to, because if you get to tell your story, it's a great way to pick up new fans.
100%.
Or followers. Because sometimes I get people follow me and they DM me and go, by the way, I heard you on such and such podcast the other day. You seem like a nice guy. I really like what you said about blah, blah, blah. And now I've discovered your music.
I love that.
It's wicked, isn't it?
It's the same thing with podcasting, to be fair. Do you know what I mean? The fact that each person that comes on has a level of cosign, and it validates your existence, and it's the same sort of principle.
It's kind of like, I feel like back in the day, like talk shows, but people have no patience now. People just want everything instantly.
Instantly.
They want everything has to be on demand. Like, and podcasts are kind of like, for me, they're like, whether they're audio, like if they're audio, they're kind of like old school, like Radio 4. If they're visual as well, it's that YouTube generation thing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, I want to know about this person right now and what they've got to say, and I'm going to skip through if I don't like that bit, and I'm going to skip through.
Yeah.
And it's I'm going to get everything I want. And it's the same way people consume everything now. They consume music like it. They want a quick fix on if they like a person as well. Like, someone told me this bloke's really interesting. I'm going to go listen to this podcast, and I've decided I don't like him. Or I don't like him as much as my... Or my friend said he's hilarious. I don't think he's funny because I skipped through it really quickly.
Interesting.
And the same thing with TV show. I didn't make it past episode one, so I don't like it. Skip.
Yeah, exactly. And you think about all those box sets on Netflix that people don't end up watching because they see the first, 20 minutes of the program.
Exactly. And whereas before, you used to actually... I'm going to listen to this radio show for 2 hours and maybe there's something I like. Or I'm going to watch this TV show for an hour and maybe there's something I like.
Is that a shame?
Yeah, I kind of miss that.
Yeah, I miss that too.
But I know that I don't have the same patience either.
Yeah, I know. And you kind of, lead by your own examples, isn't it?
That's the,
a friend of mine, or someone, it was a little while ago, you know, she was, and still is, a big fan of you. And one thing that she loved about Example was the fact that you're relatable.
Okay.
Just going into the subject of, like, switching on and off. You're clearly on right now, people. I can tell by the glint in your eyes. But, it's because you're approachable, because you're there's an element of lad next door. There's the banter, heavy banter. You've always been a bants man.
And I think it comes across in the music as well.
Yeah.
I think when people often say to me, when I meet fans, they're like, oh my God, you're exactly like I thought you'd be. I love that. Because I'm like, I think there was a period probably from 2010 to 12 where I was doing too much drinking, too much drugs. I was always hungover. I was also starting to become really famous. And I don't think I became like a really horrible person. I was just a bit cockier. I just thought I was trying to be Liam and Noel Gallagher.
Yeah, but hold on a minute. But you did give as good as you got. Like, I remember
I used to dish out abuse on Twitter. Yeah.
And then were you just kind of.
But
the way
now
you
I'm just like so fucking peace and love with everyone about everything.
Is that wisdom with age?
Yeah, that's wisdom with age. Yeah. But also, it's just because you realize like my kids are 7 and 4, and it's just like you can't react like. Like for instance, it's like I love an illegal park. Like, it's my favorite thing. And in the UK, you might get a ticket or worse thing, a clamp.
Yeah.
In Australia, I don't really do much, so I just love doing illegal parking.
Well,
like
just parking up on a fire hydrant or something.
No, not that bad. But I'm just like, I'm gonna park. And then I realized my missus is like, you can't do that. I was like, but no one cares. And she was just like, I care because our kids are subconsciously watching you do this and they're going to grow up thinking they can do whatever they want in certain situations. I was like, you're so right.
It's true, isn't it?
And then it's like, if I didn't have the kids, I'd just be there still doing illegal parking.
Yeah.
But it's the fact that Erin's just like, babe, think about this. Like, we think about the young men we're raising here. We want them to be law-abiding citizens, you know?
Yeah.
There's certain rules are in place for certain reason. And I was like, yeah, but it's such a simple... but then they're going to grow up thinking they're better than everyone else. And you don't think you're better than everyone else, but you're so used to getting away with things.
Yeah, getting away with it.
By virtue of being famous or people letting you off. Or
this,
people
this
giving
comes
you,
into mind. This.
People, yeah, or people giving you freebies or, you know, it's like you walk into a restaurant, oh, we're full. Oh, it's example, yeah, you can have a table.
Yeah,
that's really not fair on the other people waiting, but I'm going to take the table.
I always felt like a... When I did that, oh my God, I'm really sorry. Walking away from the queue of hate.
The maddest thing is when I'm walking around a shopping mall in Australia, and they've got like the massive, they've got big Westfields everywhere. You know, we're in London, we've got Stratford and Shepherd's Bush. In Australia, there's Westfields everywhere. Like in the middle of nowhere, but it'll be an amazing bowling and cinema and all the restaurants and shops, etc. So whenever we go to a Westfield, my eldest says, Dad, Stada, stop knowing everyone. Because People go, walk past, and go, hey, mate. And Aussies are so blunt as well. They go, don't like your music, just want to say hi. Or they're just like, or they
really?
Just be like, yeah. Or they'll be like, hey, mate, big fan, don't need a picture. No, I don't want a picture. Have a good day. Or, oh, mate, your missus is fit, don't like your music. Also, whatever.
Got it all mapped,
or, no,
right?
People come over and they want a selfie.
I love it.
And, like, I stand out quite a bit in Oz. I just think it's because. I just look.
Well, you're quite tall and you're people.
I'm quite tall and I look completely different to most.
Success beacon. It just
I dress very differently to people in Brisbane. Maybe in Sydney and Melbourne, I'd probably slot in a bit
more.
One of
the more London-y kind of.
Yeah, but yeah. Brisbane's like, I stand out like a sore thumb. Yeah. So, yeah, my eldest, Evander, he's like, Dada, stop knowing everyone all the time. You just know everyone. I was like, no, they. And then Aaron's like, no, they like Dada's music. He just said he didn't like Dada's music.
Evander looks like a bit of a rock star, though, in the shots, though, isn't it?
Yeah, Evander and Enyo, they're both... Evander's like a little genius, and Enyo's like a little
rock star. He's like ghost for the camera. He's like looking like on it. Yeah.
Enyo's... it's mad, because I named Evander after, obviously, Holyfield, and it means benevolent ruler. And he kind of feels like he's already on that tip.
Yeah.
He's, like, very in control and very... studious, he's very smart. His room's like immaculate, tidy. So I can see he's going to be like a good leader. Whereas Ennio, who I named after Morricone, who's like one of my favorite composers, he is just art and creativity and madness and entertainer. So they've kind of like, they've both sort of somehow. They're completely different kids, and that's what the fascinating thing about kids are. And like, there's little bits where they're like me, and little bits where they're like their mum, but how different they are.
That's so sweet. Isn't it?
And this was getting onto this, what we were just chatting about in the coffee shop downstairs about not wanting to drink as much or wanting to be fitter and healthier. It's as you see, it's not just holding a baby.
Yeah.
Holding a baby is an amazing feeling, but it's you're like, oh, wow, they're growing up into little people now. They're little men.
Bonkers.
You know,
yeah.
And then you're just like. They're independent and like, and then that is the sort of sobering thought of where am I in my life? And I need to see, I want to see these kids have their own kids. And it's that, I didn't really get that when they were say 3 and 1,
yeah.
7 and 4, and they're going to school and they're getting school reports and then like, you know, the teacher's talking about their personality and stuff. And then you're like, I need to be here to see these kids grow up.
Wow.
You know what I mean? When, and I think I was even reckless like 4 or 5 years ago. So both of them were born. But I wasn't like an alcoholic. I wasn't drinking all day, every day. But I mean, alcoholics don't have to be people who drink all day, every day. But you can be sober for 3 days, but then just get battered.
Yeah.
And think every Friday and Saturday, that's still an alcoholic. If you're saying to yourself, every Friday and Saturday, I'm going to drink all day. You know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying. And it's more of the long game of that attitude.
Even if you're like, I just have one glass of wine with dinner every night.
But if you do it every
night. If you do it every night, yeah. It's a form of alcoholism.
That's right.
So I was just like, it's got to get shit in order. You know what I mean? Because I'm 40 next year. I'm like, I need to get to at least 65 if I want to see these kids maybe get married or have their own kids.
And
or
see the fruits of your labour.
The fruits of your labour. Otherwise, it's all been for nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just like, oh, yeah, my dad died and he's left behind some music, you know. And okay, there's 7 albums there, but and he's got all these pictures of his gigs, but
and we've got seats in a restaurant, but what's
it
mean?
But yeah, he's bought us this lovely house.
Yeah.
But I wish he was here to see me get married.
Because that's really all it is. Yeah, that's all it is, really.
And that's the kind of the sobering thoughts.
Sobering you are. You haven't been drinking and you're
well, I do, but like, I'm just like, I've been here for 3.5 weeks now.
Let's talk about, hold on a second, I don't want to deviate at all too much. Tell us about the other, Elliot, tell us about the other example, before the sobriety. Tell this is what this podcast is about. Tell us about the shenanigans of example, post-ministry. Pre-ministry.
I was an arsehole.
Talk to me about the consumption. Talk to me about, talk to me about the partying.
I don't know, mate. It was just like probably five nights a week.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I'd get up. I'd probably wake up at midday sometimes, probably cancel a photo shoot or a meeting or a studio session. I was always really good at sort of like getting up and still going for a run along the river.
Mm-mm.
Not only to sober myself up, but I thought that gave me an excuse to carry on the next day.
Yeah, exactly.
So
delete what you did the night
before. I might have looked like I was in decent shape, but I don't know. The stuff that I was putting into my body was ridiculous. And it was probably nonstop for 3 years.
Really? Non-stop for 3 years?
Yeah. Like, as occasionally I'd go back to Australia to visit my mum and dad before, and then whenever, because my mum and dad aren't big drinkers, I'd go to theirs and maybe I'd have a whole week and have like maybe one beer in a week, which kind of felt like a nice detox. But like, for instance, like 2014, I did 128 gigs, 116 flights and 128 gigs.
And you drank your way through that?
I'd probably have 10 units of alcohol at every gig. At least.
Fuck's sake, wow.
And that was, I didn't do one gig sober. Stupid.
Yeah, when you think about it.
Yeah. I've done 5 festivals since I've been here, and they're the only times where I've drunk. But now I'll have one beer before I go on stage, and then maybe 3 or 4 drinks afterwards.
And that's kind of it. That's your night out.
And that's it.
Yeah.
And I'm cool with that. Yeah. But I can go to the pub now and have lunch and not have a beer, which I couldn't do before. I can go out for dinner with friends and like have 2 drinks and stop myself, take myself out of the situation, take myself home. So it's just about doing that now. Like the other, so last Wednesday, I got an honorary doctorate from from the University of London. Yeah,
for come on,
Doctor of Music. Obvs, Doctor of Music.
Do you expect around here? On so the
as you see the pic on my Instagram, I look like something like fucking Hogwarts, like with a sorting hat on. So I've gone to I'll get to my doctorate, and we went to the pub after. And it wasn't actually too crazy. It wasn't like, it was just like, we had a nice.
Is that where you were, your boys?
Yeah. So I had like steak and chips, and it was like a pint, and then another pint, and then maybe 4 or 5 old fashions.
Yeah.
And then it got to like 9 p.m., and everyone was like, oh, we're going back to yours, Earl. Because I live around, my flat's around the corner on the Thames. I was like, nah. What? Come on. Yeah. I was like, nah. Oh. I was like, yeah, mate, I've got an interview tomorrow at 8 a.m. I'm going to get up and go for a run and then go to an interview. And they're all like...
gutted.
Yeah. But no, but they're like, what, 2 of them were actually like, I like this new Elliot.
Yeah.
Gave me a hug and they're on their way. They were like, I'm going to wake up so happy tomorrow and so fresh.
Sometimes you've got to have the disciplinarian in the
room. I didn't have that discipline before. When you're on the other side of the world, missing your wife and kids.
That's a big one, isn't it?
And do you know the hardest thing is waking up lonely in an apartment, a lovely apartment in Fulham on the river, and waking up and hating it. Because there's no noise. There's no kids.
Yeah.
There's no cuddles.
Yeah.
There's no, oi, what are you doing? Like, and play fighting and putting the bowl down and, you know, like, the 4-year-old makes his own cereal and the 7-year-old's like, you know what I mean? But I just, all those little things, getting ready for school, and then my oldest does his homework in the mornings. And then I take the little one, Enyo, he will go out and water the herbs in the front garden because I've got a herb garden, which I take good care of. It's like my third child. And then feed the cat. And then we open up all the doors in the house because it's obviously lovely and warm in Brisbane most of the time. So you open all the windows and doors up so you have this amazing breeze come through the whole house the whole day. And it's just those sort of things.
By the way, you should see that you got one hell of a... I mean, El Hornet, as I did mention to you, El Hornet... from Pendulum, we were chatting, he goes, have you seen Elliot's house yet? Jesus Christ, tell him to get some pictures to you. They're fucking incredible. That was a bad impression, sorry, El.
That was quite a good impression. No, it's a mad little, they call it an old Queenslander. It's basically like a little bungalow that was built on a small hill, and they kept the original house and just, I didn't do it, the guys who construction and architects, and they just turned what was essentially a one-bedroom bungalow into this 5-level
some fucking grand design shit.
Yeah, it's like grand designs, isn't it?
And
we've got like a dual entrance. We've got a front door and then another entrance down the bottom. And then like, oh, it's just
it's like, all open, isn't it? Yeah, it's all open, isn't it?
All like, open, yeah.
All the windows, like, it's all, But did you ever worry about the insects and stuff going in, crawling, you know, like spiders? I mean, it's a very wife, British question, isn't it?
Luckily, my wife's really good with spiders. Like, she used to work at a zoo. Right. So before she won... before she did FHM Student of the Year
and standard.
Miss Universe and all that sort of standard stuff that
big
women
dad
do.
Up.
you know, most wives.
Talk that shit. Come on.
Before she did that, she worked in a zoo. So she's amazing with animals.
Yo.
She's not very good with snakes, but luckily, I've seen in 3 years, I've seen a snake 4 times.
Have you?
Two poisonous, venomous, and 2. Safe ones. Like, we have green tree snakes, which I'll actually pick up. They're really like quite gentle. The kids play with them.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, kids play really gentle with
them. That's cool.
But then there's spiders I can't handle, whereas Erin's amazing. She'll just go out. So they have these things called huntsmen. Huntsmen's are about the size, they can go to the size of your hand.
Yeah, they're massive, aren't they?
And they look like tarantulas, but yeah. They're safe. They're completely safe. So she'll just go over and just literally pick it up by its,
yeah,
by its body. And then just go, come on, mate. And just put it out in the...
Oh, God, that's
cool. Yeah, she's a bit mad like that. Mm. She hates cockroaches.
I hate cockroaches.
But I quite like the crunch of the cockroach, so I'll go, yeah, I'll chase the cockroach. But since we got the cat catches everything. The cat will get the spiders, eat the spiders, get the cockroaches, eat
secret
the...
weapon, see?
And then people, and then my kids let the cat lick their face. I'm like, not only has he been licking his ass, he's been eating spiders, yeah, and cockroaches.
I've never understood people to do that with their animals.
Yeah,
no
with their
way.
Dogs. Come here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's like, that, wrong not with only you, has that dog been licking its own ass, yeah, it's been licking that dog's, yeah, ass. Which has been licking its owner's face.
The fuck's wrong with you?
Yeah, and that's how we got fucking COVID.
COVID, yeah, that's good. Dogs create COVID.
Dogs were licking a bat's ass.
talk to me about the studio process, Elliot. Tell me about the creative process and how, because let's remember you're a doctorate of artistical integrity and
it used to be, I get sent a lot of beats,
right,
which is the hip-hop way, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know,
always.
People play you stuff
always.
And then even when I started making dance music, I'd be sent a beat, right. So maybe 10% of the music was made from scratch, maybe starting at the piano. Everything else was a beat, me writing over a section of that beat, and then the producer taking that away and turning it into a song. And then I was going back and forth. So like Kickstarts, for instance, there was probably version 27 was the one that was released.
27?
So it was 27 versions of that song,
so
to get it
perfect. So from incrementation to completion, yeah, yeah, mastering. We've got to have 3 different masterings.
Now, yeah, yeah. No, Sub Focus mixed and mastered that himself. But
amazing.
That song was, I think, the most versions I've ever done of a song. I think Change the Way You Kiss Me maybe did 25 versions. Stay Awake, which I did with Nero, which was number one as well. That was maybe version 22 or 21. So there's a lot of perfectionism that goes into it, because you're thinking, I wasn't ever really thinking about Spotify back then. You don't, because now people think about Spotify, the intro on a song, just because of skip rates.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, if it skips past the first 7 seconds, so they want to have you back invested in the song within the first 2-3 seconds. So what we were doing back then is I was just trying to get it perfect for festivals and clubs, because it's dance music. And then someone at the radio would maybe tweak it for radio, which is fine.
Yeah.
Whereas now, everything I'm doing, I usually go into the studio with a bassline idea.
Do you?
And the whole new album's pretty much UK garage, two-step the whole way through, with a couple of grime influences, and then there's two drum and bass songs, and then there's two kind of French house Daft Punk vibes.
Nice.
But everything just comes from me usually starting with a bassline.
Mm.
And then I sing the bassline in, and we turn that into MIDI. And then my producer, James Angus, who's done, an Aussie guy in Brisbane, he's done most of the new album. He'll just take the MIDI of me singing the bass line, and then that's where the song starts.
Must have been really important having someone so close in Brisbane to work with.
Yeah, he lives, his studio's 10 minutes from me. And I can get everything done in the morning that I need to do for the whole day, whether that's shopping or watering my herbs or cooking dinner for the kids and having it in the fridge or going training with my wife.
Yeah.
I start studio at 12, and then I'm always home to read to the kids. Like by 6:37.
Wow. Jesus Christ. This is,
it's, mate, it's honestly, it's a dream. It's a dream come true. Like, yeah. I might only go in the studio like twice a week.
Yeah.
But I made the whole, this is my 8th album. I made the whole album between November and February.
Do you let them get on with it a lot of times, or do you have to be there present? Is it a case of that you know them well enough as producers?
I won't leave the studio until all my ideas are down. So whether that's sound effects, samples, arpeggios, a string section, a horn section, like obviously all digital. I haven't got a fucking orchestra. But
not like you used to.
I won't leave the studio until the whole song sort of, there's a shape. There's a 3-minute, 4-minute shape to a song.
That you can walk away and say, right, that's how I know.
And then I know that James will go away and finesse it.
Yeah.
And then... yeah, and it's been an amazing experience working with him, because he's kind of like the only producer who's kind of like, I feel like, I'm not saying he's as good as Calvin Harris, but Calvin Harris can just do everything. Like, he's an amazing vocal producer. He can play most instruments, and everything comes from his head. And I kind of feel like with James, I've got that same approach. Obviously, if we start having some success, then they'll say he's as good as Calvin. But, but yeah, people used to give Calvin a lot of stick. Especially people used to have arguments with people in bands and stuff, you know? like saying it wasn't real music.
He's
and that.
A multi-millionaire.
No, but when you watch him break down the songs that he's made,
yeah,
he's playing every instrument.
Yeah, and that's
he,
the
and
thing.
He, and he mixes it. Does and it masters all,
he's
it.
A one, he's a one.
And, then and if he wants to, he sings it as well.
Yeah. It's bonkers. That's fucking... There's only a few people who can do that. What, yeah. Skrillex?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Two, maybe, that's it.
Skrillex, yeah. I mean, Chase and Status are pretty high levels. Like, I mean, between them, they
but
can play
person,
a few.
Yeah.
I don't know who else is there.
I don't know. I don't think there's any...
I mean, I've been fortunate enough to work with some of the best in the world. Like, I worked with Stuart Price.
Who's Stuart Price?
So Stuart Price made Madonna's massive comeback album, like, sort of 15 years ago.
Ray of Light and all that.
Yeah, and then he did... The Killers.
What?
And then the Pet Shop Boys. And he's, mate, if you
is
look
that how you connected with Pet Shop Boys?
Yeah. Okay. So if you look at Stuart Price's list, he's one of the best producers of all time. And he's one of those guys, he kind of does everything himself. The other guy I worked with, Fraser T. Smith, who I've seen, he's done like Adele and Rita Ora, and he did the early Tinchy and N-Dub stuff. But he's probably more famous recently for Stormzy's albums, Stay at Dave, Kano. So... He's another guy where you're in with him and he'll either start on the guitar or on the piano.
That's just a good
and
feeling
then
to know.
And builds this whole song himself from start to finish.
Yeah, that's cool, isn't it?
But I don't know if he mixes it. And I mean, he can. But that's what I mean. I think there's Calvin and Skrillex are pretty much the only two. There's got to be some hip-hop producers maybe.
I've got to big up James Rushton as well. Does it, Fungia? He's a one-hitter as well.
I mean, like even like Timbaland. I mean, Pharrell's probably on that level.
Pharrell, I think...
But
then,
most of these guys have engineers as well.
Yeah, that's it.
Like, they're ideas men, but
the
they've actually got...
behind this machine.
Yeah, there's other people in the room, whereas we're talking about people where there's just one man in the room.
One man, which also, there's no rules.
There's no rules.
You know, as long as you get a good song at the end of it.
I can play piano a bit, I can play drums a bit, but I'm not going to get on stage and do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, and yeah. I will always try and get the best vocal performance out of it and write the best like bars possible. But I've never really tried to compete with anyone. I'm just trying to compete with myself constantly.
I feel like you definitely compete with yourself a lot.
Yeah.
I think, don't get it twisted. You are super, like, competitive, aren't you?
Yeah.
You really have.
I get it from my dad. And like, so I called my dad. He was living in Australia. So, Dad, watch the song come up. So it's 18 in the charts. My dad was like, well done, son. Let me know when you got a top 10. Next single was the next single was number 6 in the charts. My dad went, well done, son. Let me know when you got number 1. Got number 1.
How do you get to a number 1 in your mind? How does one person with that sort of tenacity? What?
I didn't want to stop. I didn't overthink it. I just every time I wrote a song for about a 3-4 year period, I was trying to write the best song possible.
So it doesn't matter who was in there.
Yeah.
You don't need a one
like,
shot producer.
It had to start with a massive riff. Mm. It had to have a drop. Maybe had a rap in the middle, like a 16-8 bar rap. But I just wanted the opening lyric to grab you. Because never been afraid of the highest heights. Right, I'm in. I'm into this song.
Already in.
And then the tagline.
Yeah.
But basically, all my songs, if you go back to all my songs from 2011 and 12, all of the lyrics are grunge and blues inspired. Everything's inspired by, like, Nirvana, pretty much.
Yeah.
Like,
I can hear it.
Like, when you, like, if you take away the electronic element and listen to my performances, I'm just basically trying to do my version of fucking Kurt Cobain. Like, I've never been afraid of the highest heights or afraid of flying.
Mm.
I've never been afraid of the wildest fights or afraid of dying. They're like a fucking grunge lyric. And then you change the way you kiss me. Like, all of my songs were depressing. They're about cheating on my girlfriend, staying up too late, doing too many drugs. Basically, grunge music. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everything from that era. Like, think about the lyrics to Stay Awake. If we don't kill ourselves, we'll be the leaders of a messed up generation.
Mm.
That's a fucking punk band shit.
Yeah.
That's not EDM. That's a fucking punk band shit.
It's true. And it's social commentary.
Did we take it too far? Did we chase the rabbit into Wonderland? Lose $100,000?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? All these things, they're not rap. They're not necessarily electronic. They're all borrowed from grunge and rock because that's what I grew up on.
Yeah.
Like, I was a Wu-Tang fan, but I was and the dominant culture was black culture at school in terms of what kicks everyone wore and how everyone spoke what designer clothes you'd be wearing.
Hold on, and yes, last night he was with Brian Johnson from AC/DC. Come on, give us some on that. That, like, this is, he's a man of my own heart.
I hadn't seen him for a few years, and he's like, we went on a race around Italy with Jaguar years ago. It was like the Mille Miglia, which is the 1,000-mile race between Brescia to Roma and back to Brescia. All through the back doubles and streets of Italy.
Wow.
And it was Brian Johnson. He was in a Jaguar D-Type and I was in an XK 120. And every now and again, I'd get a bit ahead and then he'd just fly past me because he's an amazing racer. So we'd had this
legend.
two-week where we'd all be racing classic cars around Italy and then getting battered at night. And Brian would be going to 1 a.m. and still getting up at 6 a.m.
I feel like I'm getting smaller and smaller in the seat. It sounds like a Jack and Nori kind of story. Yeah. It's just like, yeah, no, you really know the guy. He's the man.
But yeah, he's amazing. He came to Brisbane. AC/DC played a gig in Brisbane. It's like 40,000.
Yeah, lovely.
And I was like, mate, how many guests can I have? And he was just like, mate, Elliot, my boy, I'm as many as you like, mate. And he's giving me, we had like maybe 40 guests. And then not only that, invites us all backstage into the dressing room afterwards. And him and the entire band and crew are just walking around chatting to like my wife's mum and my brother-in-law.
Can't
giving
deal
everyone
with
shots. And do you want a photo? Do you want a signed poster? Get them a t-shirt. Like literally the, and it's when you see that, I was just like, oh my God, they're the biggest band in the world. They're probably in the top five biggest bands of all time.
All time. I biggest mean, what? Selling
Iron
as well.
Iron Maiden,
yeah.
Queen, like
AC/DC.
Like maybe Metallica, maybe U2, but I don't know. I don't think anyone toured on the level AC/DC and Iron Maiden did. They were like the two. Mm. They always sold the most tickets in the most countries. And they were they're the most down-to-earth, normal people ever.
It's good to know, man.
And it's almost like when you hear about people being divas, you're just like, I'm not going to name names, but there's friends of mine in the industry and they're my mates. And then sometimes afterwards, you wouldn't be allowed to go see them because they need time to themselves. And then there's AC/DC inviting 40 people they don't know into their dressing room and giving them all drinks.
I think we all know those on the moon. Fuck you.
You know what I mean?
I
do like to come off stage and wind down for 5 minutes, stick my feet in a bucket of ice so I don't get a tendonitis and my Achilles. But other than that, I'm just like, let everyone in. And they're like, you sure? Mm. Like my security or tour manager's like, you sure? I'm just like, let them all in.
And then they come in.
I'm like, just don't talk to me because I'm in a zone. Take all the Monster Munch and drink as much as you like. And of course.
And I'll be 15 minutes. Just
and
give
then,
me a
minute. My cousin's there with his mates. I was like, mate, what size are you? 11. Take my trainers. Cool. Have my kicks. Are you sure? Yeah, just fuck off. Just let me. You know, I've just come off. I've been on stage for 90 minutes. Yeah. I just need to.
That is bonkers. You are really good live, aren't you?
I'm all right. I'm all about energy, man.
I've seen you
man.
From the beginning to the inception to now. Like you've
known me 16 years.
Yeah.
I've known you 16 years, sorry.
I was actually debating this with Kat downstairs. Big up, Kat. Also, big up, Ashley. Say hello to Ashley for me.
Hello, Ashley.
Yeah, she's in Canada.
Hello. Hello, Ashley in Canada.
Big fan of yours. And I've seen you from such an early day. There you go. That's the alarm. I've seen you from such an early inception of your career. And just to see you blossom in the performance levels that you do. And I've seen it from bands to now the DJ thing. It's more compact and more all about you holding the court.
Yeah, it's just like when I had the band, I loved the band shows, but it would be touring with 15 people.
Yeah, it's a nightmare.
There's like four on stage, but then it's all the people behind, you know, it's the laptops guy and then the monitors guy and then the sound guy and then the visuals guy. Now it's just me, DJ, sound, visuals.
A lot more fun.
And like, we can have so much fun with the visuals. Like some of the visuals in our show, there's a section in the show where it just goes for all the shittest haircuts I've had over the years. But all like animated and pixelated and like...
Yeah.
And then we have a Keith Flint tribute halfway through the show. So that's nice to get a little bit of that up in there. And then there's a whole section where it's just like fans through the years. So it's just like close-ups of fans, footage from gigs from the last 15 years.
Oh, man, that's like wicked.
From, like, you know, 11-year-olds to 60-year-olds to really bad, shaky footage from 2007 to right up to arena shows. And so there's a little celebration of the fans.
Wicked.
A tribute to Keith Flint, you know, who I always got... I was like, that's how energetic I need to be on stage. And then they're like, the haircuts through the years just make everyone, like, give everyone a little giggle. And then there's, like, we'd have, like, a little bootleg of, like the Holy Goof bassline bootleg of Drake song. And so then I'm just like, everyone make some noise, Drake's here. And everyone goes, and it's just like a sort of, you know, South Park, Terrence and Philip, Drake on stage. Like, you know, so it's just like, I don't want it to be a fucking experience. I want it to be a rave.
Yeah, yeah.
But I want it to be a celebration of everything I care about, which is there's a bit about when my wife's up on screen from the All Night video, you know, where she's dancing
course,
in our living room. So it's like, ladies and gentlemen, she can't be here tonight, but make some noise for my wife. And then we get my wife on FaceTime and then we put that up on the big screen.
That really happened in real
time. Yeah, yeah. So we have all this...
Oh, man, that
so it's
is
just
wicked.
Like, you know, there's no band, but it's a fucking experience. It's a night out. And then I feel like at the end of it, everyone feels connected. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And then I'll be like, everyone grab hold of the person next to you. And then up on the screen, it's almost like a DIY sort of matchstick man walking over going, may I put my arm around you? Like that. And then we get a big group hug and then everyone, the fucking, you know, things just...
You really engage and bring people in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's why people dig you, see? That's why my friend said, you know, he's one of us. That's the
big up.
It's the essence, isn't it? So we're seeing shows that's going to be here. I mean, obviously, you're not going to be in the UK for too much longer. By the time we get this, it's going to be a little late.
Well,
the
UK tour, January, February, is on sale now.
Boom.
We just sold out Manchester and Glasgow. Mm. And I think we've done 3,000 tickets for Brixton already, which is mind-blowing.
Wow.
Other people are, like... They said to me, apart from Liam Gallagher, we've got the best selling tour percentage wise.
Right, that's what I'm going to. That's me. Brush. Ready.
I don't really need to plug it, do I?
No, it's already done. Fucking pleasure having you on, my brother.
It's been amazing.
And, it's fucking great. Long time.
Sorry it took so long.
Don't worry. We're here. We're always here. We're out here. We're on the street. We're doing it. Big shout out. Example inside the place.
My guy.
Right, Outlighting was out of fashion. Don't forget sharing is caring. Don't talk to anyone I wouldn't, all right? Killer Keller Podcast, Outlighting was out of fashion. Peace.